All right, well, welcome everyone. We appreciate you showing up here today. You know, it's the last day and, you know, last session. I'd like to say you save the best for last, but, you know, it's going to be real super important that you guys fill out the evaluations. We have 100% participation on that end. So I think you'll find this, well, you're also going to get some really good free consulting here. You won't find a more expensive team at Microsoft than the two of us. So
did you say expensive?
Here you go. Yeah, expensive value, right? So I'm Kevin Watson. And it's my esteemed colleague of Emmanuel. I'm really happy to be here and to have this opportunity to stand up here. This is my fourth conference. I can reflect back and remember before I actually joined Microsoft 8 years ago, one of my first conferences was 2003. I went to one of these sessions. It was 2003 Best Practices, and Emmanuel was sitting in there in the group of one of the original members of the COE. And I remember admiring that, you know, admiring Microsoft as a whole. And I lived in Atlanta and saw all these things, and, you know, it's like, so I feel real special that I'm here today co-speaking with him. I've spent the last 2 years working with Emmanuel at our current customer. I'm going to say that inside Microsoft is probably, you know, I can't think of anybody that's got more experience and more breadth and more depth.
He's making
you
me
want
blush.
To talk about SQL scripts, he's your man. You want to talk about how to deploy a multi-server environment across a very large organization, he can cover that. You want to have somebody can have the right conversation, CIO? It's Emmanuel, right? But so for when you go to do deployment, that one person wearing that many hats is a little hard to cover all the bases and all the customer needs. So that's where we usually come in and the two of us work together and add that value.
Now, allow me to return the favor. I've been working with Kevin for the last 2 years, as he says, and what brought us here is something that inspired us with our current client and our other clients as well. But about Kevin, Kevin's like our community lead at Microsoft. I call him, he calls himself Joel sometimes. I call him Pretty Boy. You can see, just take a look. I hate him. No, I'm just kidding, Kevin.
That's your idea.
No, Kevin's a good guy. He's been with me. The way we work things sometimes is that Kevin will do the business analysis of the front end. Work with a lot with the executives, the project managers. I'll do that sometimes, but the way we do it is he's probably 70-30 more the front, I'm more 70-30 the back. Although we do both. We do training, right?
Mm-hmm.
And between the two of us, we get the whole thing rolled out, right? Obviously with the help of people in the environment. Sometimes when you get to a certain space, you may not necessarily have the admin access to actually touch the servers, but you go ahead and advise them, and that's what we do.
So it works out well. It's a yin and yang kind of thing. So we cover different things with one another, and it just really adds a lot of value to the customer.
So Kevin, I just wanted to make the point out. So as much as we like the technology, right, me specifically, I'm more interested in the BI side of things. So we're going to show you a lot of BI, right? That's what we're going to demonstrate here. But more importantly, I think what really inspires me is the fact that, you know, we have a lot of people who are getting laid off these days, right? You go to the government, they have sequestration, they have cutbacks in budget, right? And so what we're going to show you, hopefully, the main takeaway, one of the core takeaways is that by contributing to that, by contributing to the data behind Project Server, it'll give you a fighting chance of saving your billets or your staff positions, right? And hopefully that's the business takeaway. We're doing this because we want to save your jobs. We don't want any layoffs anymore, right? And I think that's what you could use this tool pretty much.
So to that I'd add, I mean, when I come to the conference, a lot of what I really like to watch most of is the actual customer stories. So what we have here is an actual customer story, and you'll learn more about that as we go through this. You know, just a little more on my background. So a lot of people commonly ask me, how'd you get where you are today? And I know Ed's probably going to appreciate this. When I go back 30 years of project management, so I was in college at the time, and soon after I graduated, then I was actually a builder. You want to know about project management? Well, try to build a house, right? And if I don't see any of you, how many people have had a house built for them or built it? But so you kind of understand the complexity there. I think at one time I heard there was over 3,000 different items, 100 different people come into play. Now imagine you have multiple of these going on at one time. So in the old days, this is before the computers, I had a magnetic board with Gantt charts, and I moved my little color-coded Gantt things, but I could look at the board or look at the wall and instantly know, all right, drywall today over here, plumbing to be lined up for this house, and build and go that way. But then it came to the point where I got more than 10 houses, and my board only fit so many at one time on my Gantt chart, and then I'm like, do I buy another board, or let me think about what should I do. So there was an IBM AT at the time, which I purchased. And I bought AutoCAD version 1. I bought some accounting software. There was no Microsoft that at least I was aware of at the time. So I bought Harvard Project. And I started doing scheduling through the computer engine. So that the application of how you apply technology to solve business problems is really how I got into this space. So, and it just evolved over time.
That's from the 1930s, right?
Not quite. Early 80s.
Oh, right? Okay. Yeah.
All right, then. So let's start to drive down into this. So what are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about what are some of the common problems and what is Empower. We're going to talk a little more and drill into that as well. The fundamentals for a sustainable implementation, business intelligence, that's where Emmanuel, as he said, that's what he loves. You know, I know that when I work with him on a daily basis and so forth, when he's in that mode and wearing that hat, it's like, don't talk to me. He's in that code. He loves that world, right? We're going to show you a little bit of a demo. We're going to show you actually some IP that we have developed from different customers over many years, right? It took literally, more than a year's effort in some of these reports and just the combined effort. So that's some of that leveraging of what you can get when MCS comes to play as well, and using that IP that actually can be used from customer to customer. So there are certain things that is common to many customers. And then we'll talk about what some of those takeaways are.
So to be sure, right, some people are confused with that Empower moniker there. That's not a vendor product, right? That's just an effective implementation of out-of-box product.
Right.
So we'll show you why we think it's something that can help you protect the billets or protect the staff positions.
Yeah, originally, when we submitted this to Microsoft, we had protecting the billets. And a lot of people are like, what are billets? Well, the product group is saying, what are billets? Ed, I'm sure you know what that is, right? So we had to change the name to satisfy them. But it's really, it's that customer story about that, right? So we start off with what are some of our common objectives? And what are many objections? Many of you people have heard it as well when you go to deploy to your customers and so forth. So what are our common objectives? You know, so I'm going to say that I've essentially got eight questions, or we have eight questions. We can sit in front of a customer and ask them these type of things. And I don't think there's a customer out there that wouldn't say, yes, that's something we want in our organization. Right? We do this internally at Microsoft, and I could say that, and, you know, and all our customers. So where are our investments, right? Where are we spending our money? What are the priorities of that, right? That's a big topic on many organizations that they start to deal with, and they want to figure out, because, you know, nearly all organizations have limited resources and capacity and budget, so they want to determine that they're working on the right kinds of work. So we'll drill a little bit of that and talk about some of that as well, but that's a common theme of what we look to deploy.
Yeah, very often times, what we hear from customers, right, we're overworked. You know, we don't have enough staff to accomplish these projects, and yet we take them on. The CIO says, jump. It's all about how high they want me to jump, right? But they know they don't have people to do it with. But it's always like, okay, if we're going to right the ship here, let's make sure we're working on the right priorities. And the question, I mean, you know about portfolio analysis, right? And we'll get to some of that. But these are the common things people are trying to strive for.
So what are your resources doing? Every organization has resources. Those are their critical assets. Those are the things they really want to manage and understand. And, it's a common thing. Right? And that's something we deal with with a solution. How do you manage projects effectively, right? How many organizations don't have projects? Whether they're aware of it or not, many of them have projects. But it's quite often that these customers don't have that kind of visibility. So what does something like Empower do? It helps them give that visibility.
Can you tell us a story about that? You were sitting in the Tampa airport or two project managers arguing about the dates moving?
Yeah, that's a good little short story to share with you. So I lived out in Atlanta for about 17 years, and I would fly off to all the different customers. So I would spend a lot of time in the airport, of course. And then I'm sitting within, I can lay hands on the two people right next to me. They have their laptop open. They have Microsoft Project open. And they're sitting here, and they're talking about, I hear this. They're really bad-mouthing. It's the worst product I've ever had. I can't stand it. It's this, you know, Microsoft didn't know what they were doing, and I don't know why it's doing this, and I don't know why it's doing that. And they're just really having to, between the two of them. And I got an earful at this point. I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't help overhear your conversation. I do this for a living. And I look at them and look straight in the eye, and I say, can you tell me what task types are? And both of them get the deer in the headlight. And I said, that's why you think the product sucks. You have no clue how it works. So that's just a common thing. You know, we discussed this earlier at lunchtime. That's just, we see this in every customer, right? Even internally at Microsoft. Go, and I was here 2 months ago or a few months ago across the street, had 80 people from Microsoft there, all project managers or PMP. My session was entitled, Are You Smarter Than PMP? Why? It's because it was the basis of this task type thing. So I asked somebody very simple something to do, and I asked the entire room of Microsoft people and project managers, and they simply this. Status meeting for today, 1 hour, sign 3 people to it. Guess what? And then I say, now how many people have C24 in the work column? Whole room says 24. Is that the right answer? No.
No.
Right? They don't know that. And so even internally, and all these people, and at the beginning of the session, I said, how many people are PMP? How many people are PMP here today? Couple, okay. But so when I gave this to a client and I said, gave that little test, and then they obviously figured out they failed the test, and they, he sticks his chest out and he goes, well, I'm not a PMP, knowing that I was been so for the last 10 years or so plus, and so that's kind of where I led for that session. But yeah, so that's just common things, right? So there's a lot to be talking about plans and actuals, right? We do a lot of planned work, and then there's some value for the actuals. So I was in a different session earlier this week, and you know, one of the partners talked about with a customer 10 years ago, they were saying, you don't have to do timesheets. There's a lot you can do just from the plan side. And I was doing that as well 10 years ago with the customers, right? You don't have to give them the actuals, and there's value in actuals later, but there's a lot you can do just simply sitting down with your customers or the individuals, the organizations, and saying, where are you people? What's the planned work? And we'll see some of that as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something about that. So the other thing that really bugs me about this plan versus actuals, project managers like to drop the project schedule, present it before the stakeholders, right? Once it's done, where does it go? Back in the shelf, right? They're not tracking the actuals against this thing. And there's a lot of value to it, and who actually fills it in? We all know somebody can put a percent work complete against a schedule on their own, right? But if you're not a SQL DBA, right, you're not a code developer, and you're doing the work complete on their behalf, you could be guessing wrong, right? But the idea here is you could actually use Project Server. Here's the plan. Are we tracking to actuals? Not only from a singular project perspective, but from the portfolio that supports the mission, for instance. And we'll show you some of that.
Yeah, so the basic premise here is no one really has a crystal ball, so when you go to plan, right? And I'm going to say change is inevitable. True. So, but then the actuals will start to help you to reflect back and reevaluate what you forecast in your planned hours. But it doesn't have to all come at once, and that's probably what we talk about as well here. So what are we also commonly hear on objections, right? Customers, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of resistance because there's major culture change that happens when you deploy a solution like this, right? It's a lot about change management. And I'll talk a little more about that later as well. So one of the things I hear about when you go to different departments and so forth within the organization is like, we don't do projects, right? We're HR. We don't do projects, you know? So
isn't it time for a name change, though? It's unfortunate we call it Project Server, right?
Yeah, so this is part of this messaging, and this is part of the theme, which will come up in another slide or two. And look. So another thing I heard, so current customer, I mean, we're on purpose going to kind of dance around the actual name of them, but they're, you know, it's within the government, it's the military, et cetera. One of the things he said is, go forth and train my troops, right? Go forth, I'm using the term, you know, just more broadly, go forth, train my department. So we want everyone to be using this tool to report on their efforts within the organization. This is going to be it, right? The day when we walked in, he came in late, the CIO, and he says, you got 20 minutes. So I give him the demo of the thing, and he basically, at the end of it, says, that was really excellent. It's what I've been looking for all along. And he told all the individuals that's under his
direct reports.
Yeah, under the direct reports, and they say, yes, sir, right? And then I start to hear this, but sir, there'll be casualties kind of mentality, right? You ask them to use Excel, we might be here, but now we're asking them to use Project, they're going to be down here. And then I heard the CIO basically said, I understand that, take the hill. March forward, but that, I really like that part of it. But so when I go around to message that, and that's part of what this theme about and why we want to rebrand essentially, so it communicates the individuals. And one of the first things I heard when I go meet with the different departments, the same thing. We're not PMPs. We don't have projects.
So maybe we should ask, so how many people still use Project Server just for projects? Everybody just use it for projects? No admin time? use it for every,
Okay. Another thing you will hear. So when you do reach that appropriate time and phase for a customer, they'll say, "What again? More timesheets? You know, we're already filling it out. Four timesheets, and now you want to do us the fifth? I mean, this is what we're hearing right now today." And then, so there's a natural caustic reaction to the word timesheet, I'm going to argue, because there's a connotation that has somehow tied to my pay. It's Big Brother looking over my shoulder. There's a whole lot of resistance to that. So one of the things we say in this example is we're going to do a data call for the next 6 weeks. We want to collect some actuals.
Right? So that's very key, right?
Correct.
So when you're there to use the time, the actuals coming back in to basically get your schedules to be more accurate in their estimates, you may not necessarily be looking at timesheets in eternity, right? You could be just looking at an 8-week data call. And if you try and sell it that way, it's more palatable to a lot of people, right? We know 80% of organizations is just returning updates back to the project manager, right? So if you couch it by saying, okay, you don't want to do timesheets because you've got other timesheets now, we're just looking for a data call. It's not a system of record. It's here to get your schedules more accurate, right? So do it that way, that might work.
In that same aspect, no time for timesheets. The argument is this is going to take too long and all this. At the end of the day, if you do it daily, it's really only down to a few minutes. If you've kept it simple, and that's what you try to do, don't try to boil the entire ocean and give them all these things they have to do. So realistically, it should be only a few minutes a day. And if you do it on a limited basis to get the actuals to compare back, to replan, to reforecast, there's a lot of value there. So what do we get? Another thing we hear, especially with various customers, and there are multiple contractors. There's the whole aspect, I don't know if familiar, those, how many have the project server deployments a day? You've been accustomed with them, right? So one thing you hear, because of the way it's built out of the box, you have rates, right? So they can see what every individual has. So what ways do we handle that? Well, one way is you might use blended rates, right? So we take a look at various roles, and we'll say the blended rate for a PM is X. So you do it that. But then they've got the finance or other folks or HR and so forth, and we want the real rates, right? We hear this all the time. So you're going to see, and Manuel has got a very nice solution for that answers that question.
So just to bring some backdrop on that, Kev. So from a technical standpoint, it's a common question, right? It's always been asked of the product team, can we hide fields, right? And you know you can't, right? Not even the current product, right? We tried that in 2003. It wasn't the blueprint for 2003. You know what we found out? It's very expensive to compute that on a field-by-field basis. So we took it out, right? But what we're going to show you is, obviously, there are soft areas that you can try and drive for to try and protect your rates. Obviously, having your contractor sign NDAs is one approach. Blended rates, as Kevin said. And there's a technical solution we want to show you to see if that's appropriate for your client.
So, and then here's another thing we talk about. So we heard this at current customers, like we were doing some tagging of the resource assets to the actual contracts they're coming from. And then the whole issue of, oh, you're going to be able to figure out a staffing plan, they'll underbid us. Right? So there's an element there of some of the objections we heard. So what is Empower?
What is Empower?
Tell me, what is it? Right?
So Empower, We coined this term because we thought, okay, project server is too, you know, it's too bounded a term, right? It's about projects. People get the wrong impression. We've got to be PMPs. We don't have projects. That kind of comment, right? So we came up with Empower and said, what are we really doing, right? If you notice the acronym, Empower sounds very much like empowering, right? Ludo in his keynote mentioned this 3 times. By coincidence, we didn't coach Ludo. He didn't tell us anything, right? But Empower, in short, means it could be, M could be for Microsoft, or M could be for managing or management, right? P are for the 3 or 4 things that it does. It's portfolio management, project management, program management. Work stands for, it does more than just programs and portfolios and projects, right? It's about work activity. At some point in our blueprint as Microsoft, we wanted project to be the work management solution, right? So you notice Outlook has tasks, Team Foundation Server has work items, right? Gathering all that together into SharePoint and in coming up with a work management solution is what project server is going to grow up in the future. At least that's how we see it, right? So work management is where it's going to be. And then R stands for resource management. Now it can be done, you could use it for a lot more other things, right? But I think these are the core things that project server does. Thus the term Empower.
All right, thank you. So let's come on into this. So some of you may have seen this. I'm going to talk a little more about this. A lot of this conference is about the tool, right? There's a whole lot of sessions here. We're talking about the functionality of the tool and so forth. And then that's what people start to zero in. That's usually where we start off. They'll think, they'll see a demo of the solution, and they're all about the tool. They think that's the big silver bullet, and let's go deploy it. Now, I remember one of my first deployments at the Department of Human Resources in Georgia, the CIO. He's like, so software 6 weeks, plug it in. You should be out of here in 6 weeks. I'm like, well, sir, and I handed a very detailed plan, a schedule, and here's all the line items we're going to do over the next 6 months. And I said, now, which of these things are not important to you? Which of these things do you think we should just remove the scope of? He looked at that for a few minutes, and he handed it back to me, and he said, you have 6 months. So you got to help explain that. So what's outside of that, right? There's the process that's involved. And this is where a lot of organizations have really not come to terms with yet. But if you put the solution in, it immediately takes the covers off the organization, now exposes those things. It becomes the catalyst by which the organization figures out, oh, we didn't think about that. We don't have a process for this. Now, they say in an ideal world, you should have all those processes in place before you go to deploy a tool. I haven't seen an organization yet that really, I take it back, I did see one that had a huge book and lots of beautiful processes. But what, at the end of the day, the organization itself didn't read it, didn't understand it, never followed it. So, hence, in the same boat, right? Then we talk about the people, right? Those are the two biggest components. I'm going to say it's roughly 20% of the tool. That's the easy part, right? Not to say there's some issues here and there, but those are all solvable. It's a lot harder to deal with the process and to do with the people side. And that's a lot of what my focus is, and on being on more of the business analyst side as well and dealing with the people. But that's the real key to having deploy successfully. Now, I show this, and I commonly talk about this when you start to first consult with a customer to help them fundamentally understand that. Because again, they came in here usually with the tool. They got the little children's white eyes. Like I remember the first time I saw a Swiss knife. It's like I'm telling my parents, I'm standing in the Dublin airport, and I see this thing in the display case, and they got all the little things all spread out, and I'm just thrilled to death. Can I have it? Can I have it? And my parents look at me, and they go, you sure you're old enough for this? And what is the little kid going to say? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what's the first thing I do? And so I managed to convince them, and I go home with it. What's the first thing I do as a little kid with this beautiful-looking tool? I pull out all the little blades and everything I can. My fingernails aren't even developed that well yet, and I'm breaking fingernails, I'm stabbing myself and everything else. That's a lot of the way a lot of customers are when they see this. It's like, first thing I'm going to do is get out and let's use it all. So, and again, I show this to customers when we first start to deploy, and then a very wise woman at one of my, the Veterans Administration, she used to fly helicopters, right? She says, she comes over and she draws on here and she goes, without that, you don't really have the rest. So what we're talking about here, that is executive sponsorship. Again, we get zeroed in, they sort of shoot for that target all the time, but unless there's really considered emphasis on the process and the people side, that's, you're not going to really have a successful deployment. How many people agree with that? Pretty much all of you. Yep.
So, Kev, wasn't it so much easier that we start with the CIO?
Yeah.
Top-bottom approach.
So if you got that in... All right, if you got the insight and showing them what it is they really want to get from the tool, you think when I was at the Veterans Administration, the CIO, now you all can look this up, and it's in all public, his name was Roger Baker, and he was on the hot seat in front of Congress, and Congress is not real pleased with the way taxpayers' money is being spent. Huge projects, billion-plus dollar projects, many of them, right? And they're coming in behind budget and so forth. So Congress now wants to say, and then Roger's there, and he's like, okay, so what am I going to do? He's saying, I'm going to deploy,
BMAS.
BMAS. Right. So again, some of that messaging, project management accountability system. And so what you're going to see some of that stuff here that we've actually utilized with them and that they used to report back to Congress with. But so he sort of hung his head when we first started working with him. He goes, can you just give me a list of my projects? Didn't even know that, right?
It's pretty sad.
So the first thing we did, we were in there just as a pilot to sort of set things up. So we put all these projects in, and in many cases they were just single lines because they didn't have schedules. We put it in there, and he sees that, and for the first time he has visibility in the project center. And it's like, he just felt so relieved. It's like, on the flip side it was, it's no longer pilot, this is production, let's keep going right now, right? So then you had to get the rest of the organization lined up behind that. Lots of project managers, long story there, but.
So a quick point on this, right? It is more typical for me to walk into a customer, right? And the first thing they ask about is, I want to do my integrated master schedule. Or I want to do earned value. Meantime, you know, not the first minute you walk into the shop, everything's in turmoil, right? No standards, nothing. And that's the first thing they ask for. So typically we ask them to, like, look, you got to get good first. You got to crawl, baby steps, right? You got to get your schedule data done first correctly. It's got to be good quality data before you move on to these advanced things. Back to Kevin's Swiss Army knife analogy, right?
Yep. And I, you know, I've got in the audience today, Amit, who is there with me at the VA. You want to ask him? He can further quantify and qualify for you what we actually did there. But the big thing there was just visibility in the beginning. First time they're seeing the projects. Okay, so when you go to deploy and so forth, you got to define work, right? Part of the empower, the W in there, the work. So you think about what work is, and we talked about, usually you say enterprise project manager or project portfolio manager, the first thing you hear is that word, right? So that's why we talk about it. So when all of you have probably seen the availability views, is that correct? That's built in out of the box? Well, how do you go about that, right? This line right here is the total capacity. So I'm looking at the simplest terms, say a single individual. So in the U.S., we have a standard 40-hour work week. That's the black line that goes along here. So how do you now define that, and how do you build that? How do you get visibility and resources in there? Now, typically, you know, we don't all just wear just project hats. We don't get to sign, and the only thing we do is a specific project task or projects only, right? We have administrative type of activities we do. We go to training. We go to meetings and all these other things. You can't directly say it's because of this project I'm on. So account for that time. That's part of where we spend our time. You got a couple of choices there. You could have removed or lower the overall availability to account for that. But my preference is, and I think Manuel will probably share with that, and some of the others in here would say that it's better to have the visibility of the actual items here. Next component is, and what we used here, and here's the word initiatives. This could also be those things that wouldn't be defined as projects. So you can call that any number of different things. But that's another aspect of this. It could be the sustaining type of operations that you're also that organization would do, or individuals. So that's part of that, what I would say, non-project work and defining that. The next part would be the actual projects themselves. So what you do is you look at this, the combined effect of this, and you know, you're looking at the capacity. We'll drill down when we get to the demo part a little more how that's actually used. So there's the project time. So we've been talking about this, selling the message. When I was told and we were told, go forth and train everyone. And that so much resistance from individuals going, we're not PMPs, we don't have projects. So I kind of envision here this knight with the shining armor.
Is that your avatar, Kurt?
This is the type of thing that a PMP is supposed to represent. What's that?
Is that your avatar?
Yeah. No, not quite. Mine's more of a
online
samurai.
Online persona?
Samurai, right? So project visibility and priority, right? That's selling the message. Talking about reducing, you know, resource visibility and control. It's part of what the organization is looking for at the end of the day. Drive accountability. It's not just the word project. When you say EPM or PPM, all they heard was project. Right? You want to drive accountability. And do you have sufficient resources? So there's three main pillars that we usually talk about when we deploy. There's the visibility, there's traceability, and there's accountability. These are the three things that the three primary things the solution will do for an organization. So you want to, excuse me? So capability is.
Did you say traceability?
Oh, traceability. Traceability is a good point. We'll see that a little bit. But essentially what I'm saying here is change is inevitable, correct? Now, but can you explain that story? Can you trace it back? If you've listed with a risk or an issue, can you trace that back into the schedule? Do you know where that occurred? That's part of that traceability. And hence, if you have that, it's going to help drive accountability.
And it's partly about drill down, right? It's nice to show the eye candy. People are good with that, and they're like, that's really cool. But that color is only as good as data behind it, right? If you cannot drill down, and people miss this, right? They've got pie charts, but you can't drill down any further. That's where the traceability comes from. Somebody was making a point with me yesterday. Said, well, we like the eye candy, and I love, don't get me wrong, right? I love BI, right? Somebody said, executives don't have time, you know, because they're in the golf course. They got to do other things, right? So they need to see this high-level grasp. But the point is, you cannot miss the opportunity for the person to go in there even just once during the budget year to actually see what's coming up can be traceable back down, down to the resource level if you have to, right? And that's what's important about building the system.
Again, more of the selling message is about effective collaboration, right? SharePoint's built into this, the collaboration. So to a trained eye, when you first go into a customer and they say they have product server in place, go to ask them to pull up the product center. Take a look at that first column where the icons are. If you don't really see all four of those icons, that tells me immediately they're not really leveraged in the collaboration side. It's just a real fast assessment. Spot on traceability, right? We just talked about a little bit about this traceability. That was a question or comment? Okay.
He's agreeing, man.
Objective alignment with prioritization, another critical thing to an organization. Initiate, project management as a discipline, right? That's, again, what this solution, if you put it into place, the bar begins to set a lot higher. It becomes the catalyst of which these type of things happen.
Yeah, after all, the conference is about the technology, right? Project server. But the onus is 80% the sweat that people go in there to have PM as a standard, as a discipline, right? You don't have that. You can throw it at all.
Yeah. And generally, that's the first element we start to work with. So a current customer, there was an engineering department. They had the project managers. They had projects coming down, raining on them constantly, over 100 plus projects, and there's only about 10 of them, and they kept trying to make the argument to their management and going, we're drowning in projects, right? And they had all kinds of, I saw the one guy's presentation to the management saying, again, we're trying to communicate that we're drowning. So what did they do at the end of the day? Here's your next project. Thank you very much, right? So what I told them was, I sympathize with you completely, but if we get this thing built out in the beginning, we account for the project manager's time, and you create this one picture. What's the one picture? Anybody guess that I showed them? It was the availability, resource availability view, right, for the project management. And so it was well above the line once it was thrown into the system, above the capacity line. And I said, now go back to management with this one picture and ask them. And the one where you saw it to show by projects, now ask them. Because it's very clear that it's well over the capacity line. I said, now ask them, which projects do you want done on time and on budget? Because you're not going to get them all. And immediately the whole environment started to change, the culture changed, the number of projects they're now having to deal with dropped significantly, and management now understood. And I also heard from the CIO, I'm going to keep giving work to everybody out there, to all my departments, until they can quantifiably show me that they have enough. What do we do with the solution? That's the very thing improved, right? Change in culture starts to happen. Yeah. So when you,
in Kevin's case, his boss took out this admin time so he could do his projects.
Yeah, it backfired on me. So I showed individually, I showed the stacking up, right? And I said, look at my own case here. Too much work. And she unchecked the box for administrative time and the other things that I had that was non-project time. She said, problem solved. Because it dropped it back down below the line.
Smart manager, man.
Yeah. All right, so we talked a little bit about the empowering, right? So you want to take this part, right?
Yeah, so I said some of this earlier, right? What is empower? It's not a vendor solution. It's just an effective way of implementing project server. The difference being, right, it's a lot of out of box, right? It's focused. In other words, there are certain things. I mean, the thing with projects, you got a million features in there, right? The question is, which are the features that will help us as an organization at this time in our maturity curve, right? If you're going to throw in and earn value right immediately off the bat, you're asking for trouble, right? It's not going to work.
Yeah, top of the pinnacle, right?
Yeah. Configured, in other words, obviously all the custom fields, all the views, that's part of the configuration, right? Slightly different from out of box, and we'll show that to you. Extended, meaning you can only go so much with views, right? You got to extend that with some BI that's meaningful to management. So that's where BI, SSRS, and all that comes to play, right? So it's really just base solutions, scroll with that, as you grow and understand what does my boss need, what does he want to see, so they don't fire me, then you start extending that, right? But you got to collect the good data. I always tell Kevin, the heart of a good PPM solution is good data. Forget the tool, good data, If all they do at the end of the day is one template with nothing more than 20 lines in it, right? And critical milestone that they standardize across, start with that. The soul of it happens to be where the jazz comes in, right? The BI play. So if you mix the heart and soul, you get the mix right, then you've got yourself quite a good solution. And this is what we hope we're doing with Empower. And hopefully you'll see that as well.
So Manuel, I heard you mentioned, it makes me think about some of the people in the audience here today. So you mentioned earned value, right?
Right.
A lot of people, and especially in the government, they get fixated on that. They're actually required to do it, right? But it's a very mature and sometimes very complex, right? So you have to train the organization. Ed, I know you can relate to that. We brought you in as a customer. First thing you started doing is teaching them earned value, right? Critical, right? And then we have our customers now, and they'll say, well, we want to do that. And I'm like, you're not ready. Until you can at least figure out how to schedule a person to a status meeting properly, we certainly can't go to or like the people in the airport. When they're all, when the whole organization, the project managers are pulling their hat because they still don't understand the basics, you're certainly not going to get earned value. So what are the fundamentals? Sustainable implementation, right? You all are starting to get a resonant theme of the importance of the messaging and how you go about that. And do you think Empower sort of is a more comprehensive way to approach it and a little more accepting for the individuals that you're told to go forth and train? We've heard this. You've heard this in a number of different sessions. I know some of the ones I've been here today. It's still very fundamental, very, 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 very relevant.
Right.
You want to walk with, you want to take the customer through a crawl, walk, run scenario. I saw a lot of different, at the conference, I saw a lot of different sessions where they make the same sort of thing. They get that, right? But some organizations start off with that view of, I want that Swiss knife. I encourage them to pull one tool out and let's deal with that first. So what are the management, so that's part of what you got to focus on, that management needs. So when I said, Roger Baker said to us, can you give me a project list, please? Right? What are those core needs? And it was not that
always,
tough. Right?
Yeah, always manage up, right? What does he need?
Right. So build it out in phases. What are the core needs? You know, standards and processes. Remember back to our earlier graph. Very important and critical that we deal with those. Train to qualified. So this is the term we came up, especially during while we were at the VA, with Mint and I and some other, quite a few other people, individuals. What is the qualified projects, right? This tool is only as good as the data that goes in. What's the data that goes in? MPP files for the most part. What's the thing we've talked about already here earlier? It's problematic in a lot of organizations. Do they know how to build a good schedule? It's a very bad assumption when, or you listen to the customer and say, well, our people are PMP certified, and I'm thinking, okay, fine. Doesn't prove anything, they knew how to take a test, but can they still build a qualified schedule? So I use that word qualified. So when we go to do deployment, and what you're gonna see in the demo is we developed various reports that take a look at that. There's the, what's the 14-point assessment called?
That's the
government term?
Yeah, DCMA.
DCMA.
14-point assessment, right?
And there's a lot of products right here at the conference right now that do a sort of essentially the same kind of things, but it's critical in my mind that, and we've all heard this, garbage in, garbage out, but unless you've got into your deployment needs here and you're looking at the quality of the data that goes in, and the word I'm looking for here is qualified, a lot of your solution is not going to really gain ground until you establish that. So some more of some advice here is, let me just pull these right up here.
Yeah,
and you want to speak to some of those right there?
Right. So the summary of this is that if you're looking for the heart, which is the good data, right, you ought to be chock full of audit reports, whether it's timesheet compliance for your actuals, right? Or how many baselines did this guy save? If we're in execution stage and this guy keeps saving or resaving the baseline, right, something's going on there, right? You shouldn't be needing more than the 11 baselines that we provide you. If you do more than two or three, something's going wrong there. So the first message is you want to have tools that allow you to validate the data is good, right? The second part of that is you ought to enforce it. You have to have a thug that goes around and says, where's your timesheet? Or where are your schedule updates? Why is the last modified here last month and you're saying it's green, right? Somebody has to be the bad guy, and that's what Kevin usually plays at the shop.
So you remember this, Emmanuel, you know, we see as many customers, but I can just think of the most recent example.
Yeah.
So, stoplight indicators, right? They're tied to a baseline. They go, they're green. And we see a lot of this green. So I'm like, we got to deal with this. They haven't quite caught on with it. policy isn't really in place. And again, I'm going to put more emphasis on the policy. Does your organization have the baseline of policy defined? I haven't seen one for the most part really had it well defined. It should be very written out which baseline to use for what. But I remember saying, Manuel, I need you to write a report that's going to basically flag and send the email when it gets rebaselined. Right? So now the oversight of the committees that should go through for proper approvals, they can look at it and go, Mr. Project Manager, what approval did you get to change that baseline?
So you got to be careful a bit because you're exposing people here, right? Understand, you know, you're trying to help the organization. You're not going to fire everybody, right? But you got to be careful with this information. Nonetheless, that's right. You know, it's got to be some tough love, right? You know, get them to go and buy into good data. I mean, that's the first step. Forget about, integrated master schedule or EV if you can't get your pants right on, right? You have to do that right first. Go ahead, Kevin.
Okay. So, all right. So, you know, again, start with the basics. What was some of the three pillars? Visibility, traceability, accountability. The visibility, project center. You start publishing those projects. Now, I'm not talking about a very elaborate project. You can start with single lines in many cases and populate with a proper amount of project information, and we can start to sort and look at stuff. But that's where a lot of organizations may start. Right? Well, I've seen that here at the conference again with many of the customers. They sort of recognize that because of the various levels of elements. But so here's kind of a typical one. What we would do. Remember I mentioned in the back when I talked about looking at the icons? So in this example, you can see there's a whole lot that are missing. Tells me they haven't really taken hold of one of the lowest hanging fruit in the whole offering is that collaboration. SharePoint's pretty intuitive, right? How to put up projects or to put up artifacts and documents and things, not very, very difficult. Doesn't take a whole lot of training, but getting them to do it's another thing. So tell executives and so forth, tell them to look for this. And I say, you don't see this over here? Then you need to start making some management or exercise your right here to let people know. So what do we do here? Just some, you know, enterprise custom fields that we may have in here. But here's a key one, right? We'd like to put in here last modified.
You might want to just click on the thing.
Last modified right here, we're talking about the element of this. So that tells us what? When the last time the project manager touched the schedule. So if I've got a green over here, and then I have a last modified that's a couple months old, I don't trust it's green anymore. So we again, make sure that the management is very aware of this, they're looking at that, they're cognizant of that. I tell the project managers, to be fair as well, the people publishing these things, guess what? If you're not keeping it updated, it's going to come very clear very quick. So that's part of the element you want to look at. So again, we talked about a little risk and issues. I'll show you a little bit more about that. You got this filtering. So a lot of people forget about this as well. All right, this is your first line of reporting. Because in the ribbon itself, all you have to do is click the button, go to Excel. So if I start with grouping and filtering, in this case, this is by state. But let's imagine you had it tied back to a specific strategic alignment. And my costs all roll up. Got my report. How much am I spending on X, right? And I could have got it right here. I didn't have to go to anybody or run any complicated report. You can sit down with the CIO and the rest and show them in a few minutes how to do it. Right? It's very enlightening for a lot of folks.
Want to talk about the Gantt chart a little bit in comparison with the timeline view?
Yeah, so to the train line view, to the train dying, you look at something like this, right? There's a lot of resonant data in here. As you know, the gray is the baseline, the blue is the plan, and the colored part is more the actual. But what do you see here? Today, this line right here is today's date, or essentially what you're looking for, right? But there begs the question to the train die within a second or two, some interesting metrics here. You notice, for example, on this one, say this one right here. Here's current progress. Back in November, and this is now showing, January. So we're about 2 months off. What does it show over here? Green. Why do you think that is? Why do you have green over here, but yet they're showing the truth over here, progress? Shouldn't it stand to reason that progress should be somewhere probably close to the current date if it's really green? Anybody care to guess at what probably happened here? I see you nodding. Ed, you know? I haven't updated schedule, correct? That's a very strong aspect of it. They may have rebaselined it and turned it back to green, right? But updating the schedule is a big component, right? But you show people that, and they look at that, and the management is going, you know what, I can see some problems here right away.
The core point being, right, you don't have to do fancy BI to get at this stuff.
Right.
People are so enamored with the timeline view. I like it too, don't get me wrong, right? But part of the traceability is Say you're, I like your analogy about the Ferrari man on the website buying one of those. And this is, he does it, he does an excellent.
Yeah, we'll get to, I think that's right here.
All right,
so
right,
excellent,
okay,
excellent segue there.
All right.
So, current customer, many other customers. What do they generally do to report on before they have project? You know, if they're somewhat sophisticated, they might have come up with, they're using PowerPoint and they've created some timeline views. They found the project will do that, or they found before the Visio would do that. It's kind of cool, right? I mean, it shows, it's certainly useful. Let me go back there. It's certainly useful in terms of it's communicating some key information to stakeholders. That's really the number one purpose of this is. But, you know, it becomes in some organizations the great mecca, which they actually go to look for. And so what I'm going to say to that, again, it's useful. But what happens here is we have it's a mindset. So like you said, the Ferrari.
The analogy about the Ferrari.
My analogy, and I tell this to our customers, is essentially that, all right, this is good information. But for me, it's a much like buying a car off the internet. How many people are fairly skeptical or would not be very comfortable about buying a car off the internet, right? Exactly.
Only Klaus. Two people? Come on, Klaus. Did you buy
now,
a Porsche off the internet?
I happen to know you got one sight unseen, but so here we have, so think about it. So I know I can look at this, I say it's a Porsche, but I only see one picture, I can know that it's a Porsche, but I go to the back side of it and I didn't see that it was wrecked or it's been flood damaged. What does Project Server allow me to do? I can drill down and look under the hood. How do I look under the hood? Click on the name of the project, I'm down and I want to look at a tracking Gantt view. Now the truth comes out. So if you look at, so this again, I'm at the mercy of the seller. I only want, they're only showing me what they want me to see. But now I have, because of Project Server, you have that capability to drill down, look under the hood. So something like this, there's a tracking Gantt view. How many people familiar with that? Everyone? Excellent.
Again, out of box, right? Nothing
out of the box.
Fancy here.
So just you notice here we've added some schedule indicators in here. So for the first one at the task level, I've said, all right, so show me. Essentially, so we're going green here for a while, and all of a sudden we hit red. So I know which task, right? I come over here, and I can look at the baseline. It's probably a little hard to see where you are in the room, but there's a little bit there. I said the baseline for this activity is going to 3 days. What actually happened? It took them a couple months to get that task done, right? I'm asking project managers to go publish their projects, right? And before they didn't exist, it took a little while. So we're immediately right off plan. So we can notice that. So it's a red indication. This traceability that we brought up earlier, this is where you're getting it. This is where you're seeing the truth. Again, as you just said, Emmanuel, right out of the box, we have this capability. Now, there's a story to be told here. You see the variance that took place, and you see how things begin to shift all the way through here? It started right there. Now, that's an issue, is it not? Does management not want to know what the issue is when they look at the variance and want to know why things started to go off track? What do you want them to be able to do? Within a couple of clicks, get to the data, right? What does the solution tool allow you to do? So I would expect, my expectation is, and what we ask them to do, is to always ensure that you put that traceability in there, you go ahead and account for the risk, issues, et cetera, and you tag them straight to there. So now, when the one click, well, let's say they went into the Project Center with basically one or two clicks, they clicked, they saw the indicator said red, they drilled down into the task details, we now see that the variance, and with about the third or fourth click, I'm into the actual issue itself. See how easy that is? And that's very powerful to the organization. But this really sold in well in terms of, again, the used car, mercy of the seller, but now. And if I want to test drive the car, I'm going to open up that schedule in Microsoft Project. If I'm familiar with that, do all number of things with the actual schedule. And you have that ability to do that as well, test drive itself. But this is where a lot of organizations currently live, right?
So again, the theme about out of box, crawl, walk, run, traceability, accountability, right? That's when this thing starts to resonate. If you talk about this thing as a feature list, I want to use my resource planner for what? I want to use earned value, right? You're not there yet. So, you know, you want to build this properly, right? Keep going, Kevin. We've got
all right.
Like
so,
26
resource
minutes.
Availability views. Now, some little key things that a lot of people are not probably aware of here. You'll probably look at this, you've seen this, you've used it. We use it pretty extensively. Again, out of the box, stressing out of
right.
the box features in the beginning. But what's not readily understood to some people is, especially in the beginning here, you see this part where it says date range. So they don't always keep this updated. So what I tell them, this is a forecast tool, what happens here. Now, many people realize that if you're looking at prior weeks, that over here in the Gantt, or in this view here, in the bars that are stacking up, it's also taking into account what? Timesheets. Now it's going to look like it's double counting, And people start to get a little confused about all this, so what we have to tell them and make them aware of, set that to the current date, because again, this is a forecast tool, you're looking forward. So you have to make sure you stress that to them, because it'll start to blow the mind. Why is everything well over allocated? Well, that's the past, and that's also including timesheets, and it's also including your plan work, and it looks like it's now double stacked, but it's confusing. So it's just a matter of training, explanation, understanding of that. So there's a lot of critical things can happen with something like this when you have a look at it. And you'll see in the demo when Emmanuel actually shows you, and we'll talk about some of that. So here's a concept that was from the VA, right? And I think it's something to be utilized in a lot of your all organizations. The thing that we came up and what we call it there is universal project milestones. So you want standardization. Why you put the solution in place? Standardization of various elements. So you want to ensure that no matter what that schedule is, that certain things get tagged, especially for reporting. Milestones is a good one, right, that they'll run different reports on. So you'll sit down with them, you'll determine some various, some specific milestones itself, and you tag those in your schedule, include it in your template from the beginning, so they don't have to go in and tag it themselves. So when they start off, they're already there. Now we can pull some key elements. A big thing of why, for example, again, going back to the story from the VA, it was very difficult to get things through procurement. They knew that. But because we had this in place, and because those UPMs were in place, and we were tagging this information, it was very simple to write a query that said, what's the average time it's taking to get things through procurement? Guess what we saw? 6 months. We found that information with a few minutes. Because we had this tagged, it was there, standardized, and the 6 months. So what did Roger do? He went to the procurement people and department and said, this is totally unacceptable. Things have to change, right?
So from a PMO, let me give you an example of this, right? From a PMO standpoint, they care about certain specific milestones in their framework and their process, right? That they have to do a lot of work, whether it's preparing PowerPoints, preparing cost-benefit analysis, all that stuff, right? It's during certain stages when you're turning over to operations, for instance. Those are the things they need to prepare for. There's a lot of material, so they track those, right? So this is useful when you tag it this way. If you want to know, how many operations turnovers am I looking at 30 days from now, 60 days from now, 90 days from now? So by doing this tagging up front, right, you then get that information that you can mine from and put in your fancy BI report. And we'll show you some of that.
Yeah, so let's start to get into this demo part here for you all, so business data. So here we go. This is a little bit of, you'll see the live demo here, but this is kind of a dashboard where we put the reports. So if you start the organization off with what I would say is usually many things that many organizations are interested in, maybe do a little tune to those things, you can help them recognize some of the real value here. The portfolio reports and so forth, I think probably everyone here is probably pretty familiar with strategic alignments and so forth. We don't really go into this part of it.
Yeah, so this is where we start to extend, right? Portfolio right. Analyzer yeah. Views are a certain thing, right?
And here's a custom.
But if you want to associate the project with its priority and which strategic alignment it's associated with, how it's affecting the mission, you cannot really show that in the out of box, right? So you start doing BI reports like this, right? We have metadata about the project.
Excellent example there that I'm gonna talk about this one. So you can see here on the screen, we have this one report that Emmanuel wrote, straight out of SSRS, basically taking some of the information that's already there, but it's not out of the box. So it's just a report we would gain some other fields. So just a few weeks ago, CIO sit in front of all his directs and he's talking about the solution, right? And what he's gotten from it. And he comes in here and he says, you know what? And he pulls out of his notebook and shows everyone. He says, I've been carrying this with me for the last 6 months, he says. Now we're seeing change in the organization again, right, because of the solution that was put into place. And he goes, I'm asking myself the question, why is my number three project not funded? There's an issue here, right? So, again, some of the reporting, what are they getting from this? Questions are getting asked. Behavior starts to change. Just some of the typical ones, you've probably seen this from many other things, is just getting some simple counts about some things. It starts to become enlightening as that environment, as the data is shared. This is a typical one that's done in quite an organization. Do we have enough of the type of resource of a capacity of certain individuals? When you see that, you know it's time to hire some of the standard stuff things.
Yeah, you may notice some of these things are from previous resource packs. We don't want to waste that IP, right? If it's useful, we want to carry it forward to the new version of the product. That's exactly what we did.
So this report, and you'll see it in the environment, but this is the one that took about 18 months, and this is the one that was used to report to Congress with. So there's a lot of detail in here, the different quadrants and so forth. So I'll be talking a little bit about that. But okay. This is a very critical one here. What is the next 30, 60 days? What's coming out? What's critical? They use this quite a bit, right? And I think many of your customers will do the same thing. What good is it to have them put in the, ask them to put in the actuals into what, remember I would call data call, for example? So this timesheet compliance report is already basically available to you to get and utilize that. So go chase down who hasn't filled out timesheets. Very simple report to run. Yes, we have so that as well. So you probably see some of that. But just more examples of that, some of the metrics and some trending that goes on and how they see things over in the organization. So
yeah, this is a special topic, right? This is where we say, yeah, you can't really protect fields out of box, right?
And, but
you
and can this do being the fact that we have resources, real rates, right? So we have a solution for that.
Right. So I'm not going to certainly give you any kind of sensitive information, right? I'm doing that decline, but I'll give you a very, very simple example here. If you notice that graphic, all you've got is a couple of names in a field that looks like a GUID, right? Which is a cost rate, and that's in your database. What this implies, or what this that this explains, is that your DBA doesn't even need to know what the resource rates are, right? These are password and encrypted data. Right? I'll show you some of that when we get the demo. I think we're demo stage, right?
Yeah, so now we're into the demo. It'll give us just a second to flip screens over here, and we'll let you let Emmanuel walk you through some of the actual stuff. So here we're showing you in 2013.
Right. So let me just set this up. So our client, our current client, is in 2010. Okay. So we took our reports and easily translated in 2013. In fact, and I was very excited with the announcement that Ludo or somebody made at the keynote that they're going to put SSIS against Project Online. You can store that into your SQL now. And there you can party on the data, right? And you can do this sort of thing. So what you see is standard homepage. And then Kevin talked about the Project Center, right? And new features. Again, out-of-box stuff you can leverage. There's certain elements that are very important, like your risks, issues, and documentation, right? You could use that. Last modified date, indicators, et cetera. Hang on. Thinking for a second. But essentially, these are out-of-box reports you can leverage for that purpose, right? You don't have to do anything fancy just to get immediate value out of the system. Why isn't it blink, Kevin?
Well, you want to discuss here? So, we
let me just talk about this while it's thinking,
themselves.
Okay? Huh? So this is your database, a simple one around protecting your cost rates. Big argument in a shop where you have multiple vendors, somebody says, you don't need to know my rates, right? If you do that, then you'll know how many people I'm staffing in here. You can compete with me, right? So they tell you that it's intellectual property you can't have, right? So you can protect it this way, using SQL, for instance. And then what you do is you go back to the report. Hopefully it's back up. I'm still thinking. I'm not sure why it's blinking, Kev.
Looks like we got too many tabs open at one time, and it's hanging up a little. We have a little bit of a technical difficulty here. We'll see if we can get this resolved pretty quickly.
Let me see if I can kill. Well, it's not responding
not
this way.
Hang on,
let me just kill this for a second. All right. Let's go get that started first. But while we're doing that, you might want to. Are there any questions so far about what you've seen? Is it resonating? We're all good. Hang on, Kev. Why don't you proceed with the?
You want to go back to the slide deck?
Go back to the slide deck. While
yeah,
I see if I can.
While
get
that's
this
pulling
back
that
on.
Up. So, what are some key takeaways here that we actually learned here? So, one of the things we've learned and best practices and so forth is what I want to share with you. So, again, we talked about this earlier on in the presentation. Have we actually engaged the executives and the sponsorship, right? Without all this, a lot of which is not going to continue on. You can get different people within different PMOs or different departments to be the champion, but unless they've got the eye of the executive, you know, it's not going very far. So they're going to be actively engaged. So we've got to show them what it is they're looking for at the end of the day. or help them make those decisions, those tough decisions they're looking for. Seek leadership, again, you know, the management needs. So in reference to this, what we said, you know, as we know, especially within the government and so forth, there are shrinking budgets, right? There's sequesterization. One of the things we do with this tool is actually go in there. So when the orders come and they say, cut your headcount, right? This can happen in any organization because of the budgets. Can you make the argument to defend, again, what we talked about, the defending the billets, can you make the argument to sustain the staff that you need? So because of this and what the CIO is able to do within a couple of minutes, so when the secretary comes and says, cut this, well, within just a couple of minutes, by virtue of what was set into the solution, you can come back and say, well, here's the impact. These strategic alignments are now going to be impacted. These projects are now impacted. These are the down to the individuals, and this is the cost, right? And this has actually already taken place. And because of the quantifiable data that was able to be put in front of them, they said, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but you can have your headcount back, right? And the other people in the room are going, who also were in the same boat, guess where the headcount was coming from? It's from them, because they're just simply saying, I need these people. I didn't care anyway. But because of this, that quantifiable data sitting in front of somebody, and they knew this, the actual strategic impacts was powerful. So you want to act on that mission base, right? That's part of what, you know, prioritization, keeping of the relevant assets that's necessary to deploy or to continue to sustain the operations that are important for organization. Then you want to talk about always tackling the fundamentals first. Bill, we talked about this earlier. Again, the qualified schedules, unless you have some type of tool in place or some type of procedure of which to look at the data that's going in. Again, what did I say? Tool is only good as the data that goes in. So it's very good to have a process in place that you're, some gates that you're looking at that data as it goes in. You want to develop a multidisciplinary team in order to help to do this effectively. Again, like we said, the yin and yang we have here between the two of us and the other people in the department, it's that cross-functional thing that allow you to have the deployments going well. You focus on a methodology, right? You've got to have some type of methodology, a common standardization. We saw that from a lot of other sessions here at the project conference. I think any of you would probably not argue that point with me. You want to develop a user case, right? Down to what's going to be important to the individuals and to the organization, if they can help see that through the use cases. We generally sit down with them at the beginning and have to start to look at that, right? And does the solution fit these things? You want to have a compelling business case for, again, we were talking back to our resident theme of empower. What is the business case itself, right? Allow sufficient time up front, right? That's a lot of organizations. Remember I talked about Department of Human Resources. They basically said, you know, do this in 6 weeks, and you know, you make that quantifiable argument and say that this actually is going to take much longer. Set the proper expectations of what it takes to truly get this done.
Yeah, so you have to understand that while there's technology behind this, the biggest part of it is about the process and the people, right? That's the longest part. And if you don't give that message up front, they're thinking you just put in the disks, click install, and you're done, right? I think part of the trauma that PMI gives you is they hammer PMIS system, but the story doesn't end there, right? We need to get that message out.
Excellent point.
So I've got 11 minutes, Kev. We can switch
to
demo.
We've got about five minutes as well, but y'all continue to ask the questions that are important to you.
So I just wanted to show you some things. That's more about what we did, right? So you see a chock full of reports here, and they're all nice and colored. I just have a chance to show you a few of these things, right? I started out with the hidden cost rate, so let me just go do that, right? What effectively happens is if I click on this, right, this is, again, just a mock-up report, just to show you. I'm not showing you what we did for the client necessarily. You saw the encrypted data back in the database, right? It should come up shortly. And so what I wanted to paint here was you could still see the report, right, even if you didn't know what the encrypted password was, right? So they'll get the blended rate that comes out of project out of box. But then if you knew the password and you had an external table, it doesn't make, you know, rocket scientists figure out, get the rate, multiply by the work, you got some, right, cost going forward. So here, if I just did that, right, and didn't indicate a password, clicked apply, all that's going to do is give you the blended rate from Project Server, right? Give it a second to show. I didn't get a chance to warm this up. I had to restart my machine, so it's going to take a bit. So you see the bar graph there? That's just blended rate, okay? Now, the real key thing here is that the graphic is nice and fancy, but you want to give them a chance to drill down as well, right? So if I go down here, here's part of the mission, architecture, for instance. You click down there, and you get, like, by branch or by division. Click further, gives you the project name. You click further, down to the resource, right? And this is going to load, basically, a custom view of the assignments level. So if I scroll down, it'll give you the hours for the day, right? And if I scroll right, it'll give you the total amount for that given day, for instance, right? If I pass it, so you notice the one on the very right-hand side there, actual rate cost is zero. I didn't pass a good password, right? So I'm going to put in my super secret password like that, right? Click apply. And then what you should expect to see then is getting from that cost and rate table that's hidden. Hang on. Let me try that again. Had a space in front of it.
Denied access. There we go.
There you go. So all it did was basically took my custom rate table with encrypted. I passed it the password, right? Again, you don't need to have your DBA know what the password is, right? They go, the users themselves load that up with a secret password. The other one wants to know this, okay? So it's one way of attacking it. Doesn't mean you don't still get NDAs from people. So if your DBA is the one who loads the rates, right, they have to sign in an NDA saying, you know, you can't divulge these rates to other people, especially if they're a vendor.
So that's a really good example here. Why don't we just flip back to the dashboard?
Sure.
In the interest of time, we'll just kind of show you little icons of some of these things. So some of the important things. So that defending the bills that we talked about, or where are my assets and what are they on? Where are my investments? So the question we asked earlier on, right? Something that we used here is a bubble type of chart here. So it tells, and you can drill down to these things. Basically, you're looking at where are the investments are in what baskets, right? And this is very enlightening for a lot of organizations to look at this for the first time, and they start to ask the questions, why am I spending so much money on X, or why are so many people are on this? They see this visually. So this is one of the reports that we run. Let's flip back to our master dashboard. But that was a very important one. That one we saw a little bit earlier, that was the one that took quite a bit of time, but used the report in Congress.
So one quick point here, Kev, just mm-hmm. to point it, right? So in this report, so we talked about plan equals actuals, right? So you've got plan work. The green stuff, it's all plan. If you notice the headings, plan means is the green number, right? You can put in the actual number. So this is year to date, okay? You put in the actuals against the filter here. And what you then get is essentially how you're tracking week to week. If you're filling out timesheets, right, or task updates, you should have actuals coming back in. What that tells you then is a comparison week to week against year to date. Am I tracking? Am I doing as I'm planning? Right? So if somebody asks you, if I cut you 10%, how does it impact the mission?
Yep.
Right? And you know from the actuals work, this is what's happening. Right?
That's a very critical point. Again, I heard from CIO just last week. Basically, he says, I asked for what is called a troop to task in the beginning when I got to this front, right? And we knew that he said it was mostly 60-plus subjective. So we put the information in here, and then we actually, so no one has that crystal ball. The different managers said, these are my individuals, these are the percentage of the things they worked on, and we put it in here. But now we came back and did that data call and came up and said, because your manager did the best job of trying to figure out what a person was, but who's the best authority? The resources themselves. So they went in for a period of time, put in actuals, we came back, this kind of report showed where those variances are, what we do with that variance information, replan. So now we have a much more accurate ability to reflect where those resources are to sustain the budgets, to sustain the headcounts, and so forth the organization is looking for.
So we actually have 5 minutes, so.
Okay.
Any questions about the BI piece of this, what we're trying to do with it? We're all clear?
Okay. Yeah, just go back to that main dashboard there. We'll just talk about the primary categories of it. We talk about qualified schedules. So this middle column here is kind of helping toward ensuring good data is going into the tool. Again, the tool is only as good as the data that goes in it. What's the primary data? It's the MPP files. So we have different things that track the verification and metrics, so multiple reports along those lines. You have resource reports, so at the end of the day, you're looking at a lot of things associated with this. You have project reports, and the portfolio level. But this is a dashboard we built, and this is quite applicable to many customers with some slight modifications. You don't have to build all this from scratch from the start. So what questions might you all have here? Yes, sir. Could I get you to come to the mic? I probably want to make sure it gets picked up on the recording.
Vacation and all that, right?
Probably 2080 for the year. So that's a good question. So part of what you do there is that overall capacity. So you have an enterprise calendar that would associate, for example, the holidays that are associated with your organization. So those things deduct from the overall capacity. You also have a built-in solution there allowed to, when people go on leave or away, that also deducts from the overall the capacity line itself. So it's, and again, you look at the various departments or individuals, what's the capacity? So out of the box, it's generally 40 hours or whatever. You have the ability through using the units to adjust that. Maybe you have a team of dev people that all they do is spend 50 or 60 hours a week, and you want to make that the capacity. So you can set those adjustments. So again, multiple things. You can use the project's calendars to associate, to look at the overall capacity. You can fine-tune it to the individual, knowing what the work weeks are. Then you can have calendars associated with people that are on different shifts and different times. Maybe it's a 3, 4, 5 schedule or something of that nature. You can put that, and it also will automatically adjust for the capacity lines. Answer your question?
You could do it. I mean, obviously, there's lots of different ways to skin that cat, right?
Yeah.
But was that your question, though? I mean, I'm not sure.
And that general capacity.
Basically, in the beginning of the year, you don't know when the person will take their holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So right. So you capture that. I mean, that's active, right? That's where the timesheet comes in?
No, because you're, let's say you're in January.
Right. Right. Understood, but bear in mind, understand this is also a forecasting tool, right? If a person goes and leave for whatever reason, there could be an emergency, right? A family thing that just happens on the spur. So at the very beginning of the plan, you know you're going to, well, we can do it. But then if there's an emergency leave somewhere down the road, it's certainly going to impact your schedule. There's no stopping that. There's just unknown unknowns, right? Or known unknowns. So it's just part of the hazard of this industry, I guess. You can make your plan multi-year as much as you can, and you can put in contingency as much as you can, but there are going to be some events, right, where you're going to have to, that's why issues and risks, right? If an issue happens, you log it in. And if you sit down with your CIO to go for a PMR, you can explain, why is this going red?
Well,
there's an issue.
Yeah.
Right?
So again, I want to thank everyone for your time and attention. Yep. I hope you found this valuable for your time here today, and we'd be more than happy to answer any questions after session we need to allow for our next speaker.
Good call.
Is there something you have to push a button here for to
for what?
Stop recordings or so forth? Or
you want to flip back?
No one in the back at the moment.
No, we just turn it off. But you know, we'll be staying behind or in the back. If you have any more questions, come by. Ah, there
hey.
You go. Thank you. Thank you.